Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, April the 8th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time, and wherever you are in the world, thank you for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And we are happily moving our way through this week of quarantining and staying inside and social distancing and all this other stuff and finding different ways to focus on what we like instead. So we're not going to talk a lot about social distancing. We're not going to talk a lot about that other stuff. We're going to talk about stuff that feels good. And we're going to do it in the context of relationships, because that's what Wednesdays are now. They're Relationship Wednesdays. And on Relationship Wednesday, we focus on all of the different kinds of relationships, because Cindy, you point out, it's not just person-to-person relationships. No. It's relationships with everything in life, right?
Yeah. Right. Because and you know what's interesting is that, for instance, we all have a relationship to money. Mm-hmm. We've talked about this before, of course, because we've done whole programs on money before. But a lot of times our relationship with money is a reflection of some other important relationship in our life.
Mm, true enough.
And it's really interesting. Like, a lot of people will, well, you know, the whole idea that money is evil, right?
Oh, yes.
But a lot of people will make money the bad guy for all the wrongs in the world, right? And that's really easy to do.
Oh, yeah.
We could have a conversation today, and if we wanted to decide that everything wrong with the world is because of money, we could do it.
Easily, sure.
Easy, right? Because we just say people are greedy, and, you know, not that any of that isn't true, but what happens is that sometimes if people are in a certain kind of relationship, like maybe they're in an abusive relationship, or maybe they're in a very strict relationship with, like, parents or something, they have a tendency to start looking at money the same way they look at, like, an abusive spouse or, like, an overly strict parent.
Like,
seriously, like, and it's really interesting to find those patterns. Like, sometimes when I'm coaching someone around one thing, they'll realize that they have the exact same kind of relationship with something else.
Right.
And it's always like, oh, because the cool thing is that sometimes when you fix one, the other one fixes itself.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it easier. Two for the price of one.
Yeah. Because it's always, you know, it's always about us, our relationships and how we relate to anything, our job, our body, our money, our lovers, our friends, our teachers. It's always some kind of reflecting something about us back to us.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because I don't know if you do you get the Abraham Hicks daily quotes that come in the email?
I do. I didn't read the one today.
Well, the one today was interesting, and that's why I brought it up.
It's
obviously a situation where they were addressing particularly personal relationships.
Okay.
But in the context of what you were saying, it's pretty clear it applies to all the relationships.
Okay.
So let me just read it. It says, "You cannot worry about someone and love them at the same time. Most people mistake the emotion of worry for the emotion of love. They think that worrying about somebody means that you love them." Now, take that same quote and apply it to the one you just talked about with money.
Right. Like
same
money.
Thing.
Right?
You cannot worry about money and love money at the same time.
Wow. No, that's powerful. Because we talked about this before when we did our money show, is that people will say, no, I really do. I want more money, and I do. Mm-hmm. I do love money. I think money's great, and I do focus on money. And then, if you talk a little more, you realize that what the focus is actually on is on the lack of money, or there's that underlying. You know, a lot of people that consider themselves spiritual have a really hard time with money because they see money as not spiritual.
Yeah.
Right. Like, an interesting dynamic that has happened since this whole COVID-19 thing with the quarantining. I know you said we're not going to talk about too much, but with people being out of work. So there's this, like, especially like the whole service industry is out of work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
But that doesn't mean everyone's out of work. There are a lot of people out of work, but there are a lot of people that have secure jobs.
Sure.
And for some reason, like the helping industry, like my industry, the coaches, there are a bunch of different messages going on out there. Like, there's one message saying that is where I stand, right? And it says, look, you got into this business. This is what you do for a living to help people.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like if you're not working now, like you need to be there. People need help right now.
Right.
But there's another train of thought also that's very, it's a lot, there's a lot of shaming of how dare you sell your services now?
Oh,
how dare you try to market now when people are hurting and out of work? And it's like, somebody brought up that there was a lot of misogyny involved in that because they said nobody is shaming. You know, it was another coach that said nobody's shaming my husband, who's a realtor, who's out selling, you know, real estate.
True.
Nobody, you know, but it's always the caring professions, which are predominantly women. So it always says it's like, well, you should be stepping up and caring for free. but here's the thing is that when coaches and other people in caring professions, when we make money, we spend the money. It goes back into the economy to help all the people that are suddenly out of work. So, right?
It's well, plus when I hear a complaint like that, I mean, the same quote, it's an Abraham quote, comes back to my mind over and over again, that when somebody is complaining about somebody else charging money for what they're doing, what they're really doing is they're expressing their own sense of lack. This is them coming from a place of lack and basically externalizing their lack on somebody else, saying, well, it's all their fault.
Yeah.
They're the reason why I'm feeling so lackful right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always projection, right?
Yeah.
But it's if we start looking at things as relational, so it's how we relate to other people and other things, it really has the potential to change our life when we do that.
Mm, yes.
Why?
Does.
Well, because it puts us in a place of taking responsibility and not blame.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot be a successful conscious creator without taking responsibility for your own experience.
True.
I don't think it's possible.
I agree. Yeah.
I think it is number one. Like mm-hmm. it's the first thing that has to happen.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. Because
in fact, you can't make progress without it, actually.
You cannot be a victim and consciously creating something besides victimhood.
Not that people don't try.
People they try do. All the time.
Oh yeah.
So I don't know if this is a relationship thing, but I got really fired up.
Okay.
With a thought this week and said, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to talk about this because I can't shut up about it. And unfortunately for my husband, he's the only one here with me. So he gets to hear all this stuff because I can't stop talking about it. Right. He doesn't mind. But I made a note to him that, oh my gosh, I was telling him this and I was really fired up about it. And he was like, you need to go talk about this on the podcast and to your group.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you, Scott, for bringing up a topic for us to talk about. I appreciate that.
Yes. Well, here is my thought. Because you hear me say all the time, right, that all of your emotions are a miracle, that we should not, you know, be afraid of uncomfortable emotions, especially right now. The world is like upside down. All these things are going on. And it's like, yes, we can keep our distance from the news. That helps.
Oh, yes.
But still, like, I have people now, you know, I think all of us might get here to the place where we're only 1 or 2 degrees away from somebody who's really suffering with this disease, right?
Oh, sure.
So it's like, oh, no, it's, you know, one thing to turn off the news, but it's another thing when a friend calls and says, my dad is, you know, on a ventilator or whatever. So then it's like, okay, it's right here in our lap. And this is what kind of got me to thinking about all of this, is that I'm saying all the time, you know, your emotions are all valuable. Don't be afraid to be frustrated, angry, sad, all those things that we want to put over, especially in LOA circles. We want to put them over somewhere else and say, no, I'm not going to go there. Well, this is the, I had a conversation and it is for the umpteenth time. I have this conversation a lot with different people, right? And that, and I'm talking about people who are familiar with law of attraction.
Mm.
And not yep. just familiar, but like they've used it and it's worked for them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they know what it is to like grab, I don't know, like Pam Grout's book, right?
Right.
E2 or E3 and do an experiment and get a great result, like my mm-hmm. owl or something, right? And say, yes, wow. This stuff works. Like I know it works. I use it.
Right.
Those are the people that I'm talking about. I'm not talking about like people who are completely unaware of the law of attraction.
Okay.
But here's the conversation, because they've reached out to me as a coach and I say, well, what's going on? And they say, well, I know how the law of attraction works and I've used it and I've manifested some amazing things. And then I had some things in the works and everything was going great. And then everything fell apart. So my next question, why do you think that happened? And almost every time I get some variation of the same answer, and it'll be like this. Well, things were going great. And then something happened that I got really angry about, or something was going on in the world. Let's say like this whole thing, right? Politics, right? Or this virus, mm-hmm. or whatever. And I started watching the news and I just went right down this rabbit hole and I just felt so terrible, or I felt so angry, sad, frustrated. And then things just started to fall apart. So here's my aha moment.
Okay.
So I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit, but I am getting there. We've talked about energy levels, right?
Right.
The lower levels, victim energy, conflict energy, and we go all the way to the top of the level, the very top level. I think Abraham Hicks says joy or passion.
Yeah, joy. Well, actually, there's like six of them up there. They're all kind of tied for first. Okay.
So in the model that I use, that seventh level, that's the level of absolute passion. That's the level where you can create at will. Mm-hmm. And when I'm teaching the levels, when I get to that level, level seven, I always call it the Jesus energy.
Okay.
This is why. It's an energy we've all experienced, but only in little snips.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very rare. I'm not going to say no one has, but sure. It's very rare that someone would just resonate at that level all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could, if you could walk on water.
True.
Right? You could turn water into doers. You could make miracles happen at will. Okay, so the reason I brought that up is because when I was talking to some clients that were saying, oh, I know what happened when all the manifestations fell apart, when all the things I was working on suddenly didn't work out, it's because I got really upset over a certain thing, or something happened in my family that was really sad and I couldn't get myself to come out of that like sadness, or someone I love died and I've been grieving, or I'm really angry. You know, it's always something that we would put in that category. I put in the category that says uncomfortable emotions. Some mm-hmm. people say bad emotions, right? Bad.
Naughty emotions.
Naughty. And it hit me that it is not the anger. It's not the sadness. Look, if you want to take Jesus, this is really funny because we always say we don't talk about this, but it all came together because I realized I always call that level seven energy Jesus energy. And Jesus is famous for what? Miracles.
Sure.
Okay. But there are also verses that talk about Jesus being angry. There are verses that talk about Jesus wept, right? They're like, we know he got frustrated with his disciples sometimes when they weren't getting it. So Jesus had all those emotions. So what's the difference between me having all those emotions and causing my manifestations to fall apart or stop? And Jesus had those emotions and he was making miracles all over the place.
That's an interesting way to cut yourself some slack. You know, well, Jesus did it, so I can do it.
Well, the difference is that it's not that I'm angry or sad or frustrated. It's that I judge myself for those emotions.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. It's the judgment I place on those emotions. It's not the emotions.
Yeah.
And I thought about Jesus and his message, judge not. Jesus didn't judge those emotions. Jesus didn't judge anybody. Jesus was condemned for hanging out with tax collectors and prostitutes.
Mm. Yep.
Right? So what hit me was how often, especially people who are learned in law of attraction, will judge themselves for having an emotion that's uncomfortable. It's not the uncomfortable emotion that's blocking your manifestation. It's the judgment you're putting on it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
No doubt.
So if we want to make a relationship out of this, we say, what is your relationship to uncomfortable emotions. So one of the key symptoms of victim energy is avoidance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if I was in a relationship with you, which I am, you're my friend, you're the co-host of our podcast, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I started avoiding you.
Well, we wouldn't have a podcast. Oh, no, right? That's not what you're doing.
Or think about if you emailed me about something and I just never answered, right? Or you texted me and I didn't answer, or you called me and I didn't answer. I was just avoiding. You'd be like, what is going on? Right?
Yeah.
Well, we do the same thing with our emotions that we don't like. We avoid them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When people say, hey, how you doing? We go, oh, I'm good. And we're not good. That doesn't mean that we can't try to reach for the better emotion. But there is something to be said for just being honest.
Right? There's a lot to be said for it. And the point you're making is a great point. It actually, believe it or not, I can draw a parallel to a conversation I had with somebody about dance. I know that doesn't sound like it's
okay,
a natural
no,
connection.
No, I want to hear it.
But it's a parallel as far as I can tell. This particular person is a dance instructor. He's an Arthur Murray instructor. And he had, this was before... No, all the craziness started to happen. He had a couple of students who he wanted to help them get more practice time.
Right.
And so he was asking for recommendations on local venues that they could go to that would, I guess they were country dancers or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the style is. Two-step maybe. You know, where they could practice their two-step. And there's one that's about, maybe like an hour from here. It's called the Cadillac Ranch. And it's got, you know, a lot of country western type music and so forth. And it has a lot of very skilled dancers there. And he said, I don't really want to send them to the Cadillac Ranch because I don't want to put too much pressure on them, which I totally understood because I mean, I'm not a country dancer. I'm a swing dancer.
Pressure like they're being like top notch dancers there that they didn't have to feel they were competing with. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I agreed with him implicitly in the way I answered, and I gave some suggestions and so forth. And another person came on to the chat who apparently was a DJ at the Cadillac Ranch. And she was defending the Cadillac Ranch. And ultimately what I explained to her, and she finally got it, was there's nothing wrong with the Cadillac Ranch, but there's a thing that happens when we develop a skill at something. That's when we become more critical, self-critical. And critical of others. That's when we become more judgmental because we're getting better at it. We're honing the skill. You know, so we're more focused on it, you know, doing it right and, you know, having the right style and looking good and all that kind of stuff. And so it can be very intimidating for beginners going into a dance environment where there are a whole bunch of skilled dancers, not just because they're beginners, but because there's a very decent chance that not most, a tiny percentage will start cutting them up for being beginners. Because I've experienced that. I know what that's like. So literally what I recommended was go to a bar that has no dancers. Because everybody in that bar will know nothing about dance. And they'll be blown away by whatever steps
then
you can
do. Then you get to have fun and be a star.
Exactly.
Everybody will be impressed with you. Right.
In other words, there's no judging going on there.
Yeah.
Or perhaps you might say it's reverse judging. It's like appreciation.
Right.
Because really that's
right.
What the opposite of judging is. It's appreciating.
Right? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. No, I see the parallel there, and that's exactly it. So, like you said, though, there's the judgment's not only from without. Like you've got the fantastic dancers that are like, oh, yeah, these are newbies, these are beginners, right?
But what beginners, about the beginners? I mean, geez, you know,
yeah, right. It's like, oh, go back to class,
right.
But what are the beginners feeling? It's the judgment they're putting on themselves, like, oh my
absolutely.
Gosh, like, all these people here are so much better than me, and blah blah blah, and that's the same kind of judgment that happens here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the judgment of when someone says, well, this is not working for me. And we hear that a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
In LOA, it's like, this is it. Yeah, I did it and it didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was putting on a happy face. I was trying to be on that high flying disc as much as I could and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Well, the easier thing might be to go ahead and let yourself have all those other feelings when they come up and just don't judge yourself about it.
That's how you get through it quicker.
Right? Because judgment, our level of consciousness is directly related to our lack of judging.
That's interesting.
Right? And so when we're not judging, and one way to do that is to just get curious Because curiosity and judgment do not happen at the same time. So our level of consciousness, meaning when we're at the highest level of consciousness, we create at will.
Okay.
I think it also has to do with, you know, when we're not judging, we're non-resistant usually as well.
Well, tell you what, I've got a couple of questions from the live stream that are kind of tying into this, both from Jeffrey.
Oh, good.
So let's bring them in. He says, first, what are the steps from doing the inner work to doing the helping work? Which is an interesting question.
Say it again.
What are the steps from doing the inner work toward doing the helping work? In other words, helping somebody else.
Well, I'm not sure I'm understanding the question, so I'm going to just answer it how I think.
That's fine.
I can. It sounds to me like you're asking if it's important for people in helping professions to do their own inner work first. If that's what you're saying, then I agree with that. It doesn't mean that anyone I help that I have gone through the exact thing they're going through, because that would require me to have gone through and dealt with and done the inner work about every possible situation. But I think it is important for us to do our own inner work so that we can only help somebody to the degree that we've experienced growth. So I don't know that question, Walt. What comes up for you?
Oh, well, the first thing that came up in my mind was that you really can't help somebody unless you're in a good place. If you're not in a good place, you've got nothing to give.
Yeah.
So it's really, when he described the question to me said, well, that's the order of things. You have to do the inner work first before you can help somebody else. If you don't do the inner work, there's nothing to give anybody else.
Well, the one thing I would stress about that, though, and kind of make clear about that, is that just because someone is in a helping profession, which I think I look at that category as pretty wide. I look at coaches, I look at healers, I look at nurses and doctors, I look at lawyers. They're all in a helping profession. They're all there to help and serve. And probably you could name 10 other professions that could be in there too or more. And it doesn't mean that all of us have every single thing figured out and everything.
No.
We're all still growing too. We're all still experiencing too. And we're all still figuring things out too. We just have tools that we use to deal with situations that someone not in our profession might not know about. But like I heard of a really great tool, and hopefully this isn't just getting too, you know, out on tangents, but the idea, you know, we've talked about neural patterns in the brain and how we want to develop good habits and affirmations, how sometimes people have trouble with affirmations because they feel like they're lying. Right. And I always give this tweak about, well, instead of saying I'm extremely wealthy and really I'm not, and then I feel like I'm lying with that affirmation, how about I'm in the process of becoming extremely wealthy, right? That's my tweak. But I heard a really great one, and what they were saying was that you can use the word because and tie that affirmation to an irrefutable truth.
Okay.
And it doesn't matter if it makes any sense.
Okay.
So that would be like saying, I am extremely wealthy because the grass in my yard is green.
Ah, okay. I see.
I'm extremely wealthy because my name is Cindy. I'm extremely, because in the subconscious, it just looks at cause and effect. And it knows the sky is blue, the grass is green, my name is Cindy, like the irrefutable truths. It's not going to argue with that. So it doesn't argue with any of it.
I'd even go a step further in saying what really happens in that case is because I don't feel the internal contradiction of it, I feel better. So my feeling actually drives me to a more accurate projection, to a more accurate affirmation.
So I think, see, like that's a little... like I could give that to somebody on a coaching call or on the podcast. Right. And like when I heard that little trick, that tool, I was like, oh, this is good stuff.
Yeah,
yes. Right.
Sure.
Okay. So it's tools and tricks like that, that, you know, we may know. It doesn't mean that we've already conquered every single obstacle in our life necessarily.
No,
but I would say that we're probably working on all of them because that's what we do. That's what we love. Most of us coaches and helpers are personal growth junkies, right?
And you made a great point. The fact is that there are lots and lots of people who are in helping professions. In fact, almost everybody to one degree or another is in a helping profession.
Yeah.
Really, when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the rule still applies. If you don't do the inner work, you really can't, you really don't have anything to give. So if you are a, in today's major topic, if you're a doctor, if you haven't done the medical school work, you've got nothing to give. And that work starts inside. It starts with you studying and learning and thinking and working stuff through and so forth. So you got to do that work before you can give to anybody else.
Yeah. And then there's that whole idea we've all heard this example, I'm guessing, but that when you're on an airplane and they tell you how to use the oxygen, that if you're with a child or someone you're taking care of, that it seems you'd want to tend to them first, but no, put your own oxygen on first so that then you can. You know, the whole idea of self-care, and I put the inner work there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I include the inner work with self-care. It's like part of how I take care of myself is I recognize that it's, you know, it's all an inside game. I recognize that whatever is going on outwardly in my life, it's a reflection of as within, so without. It hit me this week. You might have saw my post on Facebook, but I thought, as within, so without. And everyone's wearing masks.
Oh, right. Yes, I did see that.
All over the world, right? And it hit me when I was looking at the 10th video of, you know, people in my feed of people sewing masks. And I was like, oh my gosh, that is a reflection of what's going on inwardly with like everyone on the planet.
Absolutely.
And most of that happens on social media, right? We all want to put the best face forward on social media. In some degree, we're all kind of wearing masks.
And,
you know, the idea that for the last 10 years, at least, we've all wanted things to go viral.
Yes. You picked up on that one too, huh?
Yeah, right? So it's very interesting to look at that.
Yeah, I use that.
So I don't know, Jeffrey, did that answer your question?
Well, you had a follow-up question, actually. And I'm not sure if he saw it as related or not, but it sounds like it was. He says, what do you think of the idea that as we create help, we also create suffering? Now, that is really interesting.
That's a question for Joel Elston.
It really is. Yeah, that's a perfect question for Joel.
But I'd like to talk about it.
Sure.
Because I would say to you, Walt, that you know Joel much, much better than I do. You've known him for years, and you've done a podcast with him for years. And I thought I actually started to ask you about this recently because at one point you were talking about his philosophy of helping someone and the idea that, you know, because we all want to rush in and rescue. Maybe that's a better word. I'm in a business where I'm helping people, nurses, doctors, lawyers. We talked about that. They're all like, yes, how can I help? You need help. That's what I do. So maybe it's not so much helping, but trying to rescue people that are going through things, because that's kind of another one of those things that goes right along with the judgment of bad emotions, that emotions that feel bad. We want to put them in the bad category. We judge them as bad, like, oh no, right? And it's like, oh no, somebody's going through XYZ. What can I do to, so they don't have to suffer.
Right.
And so I don't know if creating helping is creating suffering. I mean, most of us want to relieve suffering. I do anyway. When someone comes to me on the phone and they're suffering, I want them to recognize this, that life on earth is painful sometimes, and that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. We're all going to experience pain, but suffering happens from all the stories that we tell about the pain and what we make the pain mean about us. That's where we started today in this conversation, right?
Right. Yeah.
If I'm feeling frustrated and I think, if I have a belief that this frustration I'm feeling is going to tank all of my manifestations I've been working on, right? Then it probably is going to happen. And that makes me suffer. That is like, oh, I'm suffering so much. I can't break out of this emotion, and the emotion is going to completely tank all of these things I'm working on. But if I don't have that belief and I just don't judge myself about it and say, yeah, this is really, I feel really frustrated about this, and I don't make it mean anything, and I don't ascribe to the belief that it's going to completely ruin my manifestations, then it won't.
That's right. That's exactly right. And I think Joel would agree with you, by the way.
Okay. So I think it's about worrying that other people are going through something hard and we don't want them to. And anybody that has people they love understands this. You don't even have to have children. If you have children, I'm sure you recognize this. If you have pets, you recognize this, right? Your pet is stuck somewhere, like, oh no, I have to get them out, right? So, mm-hmm. Because we care about people and animals and we don't want them to suffer. Jeffrey, I don't think I answered your question at all, but I had fun talking.
No, I think you actually answered it to a large degree. I'll take it. Well, I think Joel would take it a step further. I'll take it where I think he would take it.
Okay. Yes. That's what I want to hear.
He would say that struggles happen in life, but suffering is optional.
Okay.
Meaning that things happen, stuff happens, and yeah, we attract it, but you know, stuff still happens. Mm-hmm. Stuff happens and we have to deal with it, and it, you know, we can deal with it by running away. We can deal with it head on. There are a lot of ways we can deal with it. We can try to avoid it, but you know, stuff happens. But suffering is a mental state. That's a state of, I'm going to respond to this state of stuff of struggling by saying, oh, this is so miserable. Right. I am so upset. I am just in a terrible place because of this horrible thing. That's suffering. That's what suffering is. Suffering has nothing to do with the event. Suffering is about a mental choice that we make about how we're going to handle the event.
That's exactly how I see it. I see it is that suffering is all attached to the stories that we're telling.
Yep.
And the meaning that we're, you know, we've talked about this, which is such a great thing to recognize, is that things only have the meaning that we give them.
Mm.
And it's really amazing to catch yourself assuming something, right? I mean, haven't we all done it? You know, You email someone that they don't email back, and you're like, wonder if they're, did I say something that maybe upset them? Or, right, so you email again and you don't hear from them, and then you start really worrying about it, like, gosh, what is going on? I bet they're upset with me because of whatever. And then suddenly they reach out and they're like, oh, sorry, I've been slammed at work and I saw your email, but haven't been, and I felt, and they go, I felt so bad that I hadn't got back to you. And you're like, oh, all of those stories, I was, why? Because when we're in that place of going, oh, I bet this person's upset with me, we're suffering.
Mm-hmm.
We're creating some version of suffering for ourselves. We always create it for ourselves, unfortunately, right? Or
interestingly enough, even when we're thinking about somebody else, we're still creating it for ourselves. That's the really interesting part.
Right. Right.
You know,
that's that whole idea that that when you, how you know if your thoughts are helping someone is that, are you thinking things about them that cause you to feel good?
Mm.
Or are you thinking, and oh my gosh, I just wanted to do the giant facepalm when I read that, because I was like, there was someone in my life that I cared a lot about that I was really worrying about. And every time they popped into my mind, it would be some worrying thought. And I realized I am not doing them any good.
That's right.
I'm not doing them good by this. So if I envision them getting through their struggle and learning some lesson from it, maybe having some victory about it.
Yeah.
Having success because of it. Turning that lead into gold. When I think of that, it feels good. I'm like, oh yeah, I can see that. Then I know I'm doing some good for them.
Exactly. Well, this is what silver linings are about. I mean, we all know the old adage, but that's what a silver lining is. A silver lining is looking at a situation and instead of saying all the suffering type stories, turning around and saying, well, where's the good news in all this? There's some good news here if I can just find it. What is it?
Right. And that's what I've been trying to do with this whole situation that's gotten so out of hand. There's a lot of it that frustrates me because I think it's been handled poorly and I think it could have been prevented. So it's easy to get frustrated about it.
I've actually trained myself to get that thought and say, oops, nope, I'm on the wrong track.
Right.
Get off that track.
Right. So that's what I've been doing. I've been going, but here's the thing. All of that's in the past.
Yes.
Right? It's like we are where we are. Mm-hmm. And all of my frustration over how something was handled, no matter what it was, whether it's a global pandemic or whether it's something, you know, that's little tiny thing in my own home, it's in the past.
That's right.
So what do you do with it now? And how can you take whatever situation that you're frustrated with or worried about, how can you see it as an opportunity for things to be so much better? That's what I really want all of the conscious creators to be doing, is to be saying, how can this be, you know, that idea about the slingshot?
What do you mean?
There's an idea that the energy of a slingshot. So you imagine you pull that slingshot back.
Mm-hmm.
And when you let go, it's the energy there that's forcing the whatever it is to
right.
fly out, the ball or whatever. So the idea is that in our individual lives, whatever thing we feel has pulled us back, whatever thing has held us back, whatever is that the energy of that actually can be utilized to spring us forward.
Joel would love that one.
And so that's the slingshot effect, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we've got to see that now. We have to say, with all the things going on that are painful, that are causing suffering, that are messed up, that all of that energy, that it has the potential to spring to humanity at this point, like mm-hmm. all of us, forward into something amazing and so much better. That's what I want to put my focus on.
That's really good. I like
that.
That's
what I want to put my focus on.
Now, Jenny also has something that she brought up along the same line. I guess it's sort of an aha kind of a moment. She says, certainly if I interpret a negative event or situation as being due to something wrong with me, my thoughts or actions, then I create suffering for myself.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And something else, if you're making that judgment, right? Something's wrong with me. And believe me, this is so common. I hear this so much. When you make that judgment and you judge yourself as guilty, then you will create some kind of punishment to follow.
Oh, sure.
Because that's how, you know, the justice system works, right?
I'm beginning to think we need to change that name, but that's another topic for another day.
So let go of the judgment that's connected to emotions. It doesn't mean you want to stay there, right? It's like, just because you say, hey, it's okay if I'm sad. Well, that doesn't mean I want to be sad every day for the rest of my life. That's not what I'm saying.
No,
I'm certainly not going to judge myself as doing something wrong because I felt sad over something or angry or frustrated or whatever.
In fact, couldn't we actually argue that if you're choosing to be sad for the rest of your life, you're actually continuing the same judging pattern?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah, the thing is that when we let go of all the judgment, we can actually transmute that emotion into something that feels
mm-hmm.
better.
Mm-hmm.
Like we talk about values,
yeah,
right? I always think this is so helpful to say, okay, you feel frustrated about this. That emotion is attached to two things. You have a need that's not being met.
Mm.
Like, you know, the whole thing about the word that got invented, hangry?
I hadn't heard that one, but it's...
Really?
I hadn't heard that one.
Okay, so I think it came from like a Snickers commercial, or else Snickers just used it.
Okay.
Right, but hangry, it's a combination of hungry and angry.
Okay.
So it's like when some people...
Raising your hand, folks.
I'm raising my hand. Some people, when they go way too long without eating, you know, sometimes you get in a situation, you get caught up somewhere, you get stuck in traffic, you get whatever, and you're not able to eat and you should eat, start getting really irritable and may get angry easily. So they call that hangry. It's like,
okay.
Right? And so, if like things like that happen, when you start judging yourself over it, it doesn't work.
Mm.
It's okay. These things happen to humans.
this is true.
So yeah. Nobody wants to be hangry for the rest of their life.
No, that would be pretty miserable. No doubt
about
that.
Nobody wants to be sad all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can let go of that judgment, we can then transmute it into something that feels better.
I've got a couple of other things I want to bring up along these same lines that I saw on Facebook. But before we do that, I want to make sure that I get our promotional messages in. So if you're not yet subscribed to the podcast, this is the kind of great conversation that you get 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 5 hours of this programming, and it's all on the positive. It's all pushing, feeling good. That's why we call it your daily dose of happy. You don't get that in many places, and especially these days, it's really, really important to have. So become a subscriber if you're not already subscribed. Actually, we know most of you are subscribed, but those of you who are not subscribed, please do it. If you don't know how to do it, just go to the homepage of our website, loatoday.net, and you will find instructions at the top of the page that will just guide you right through it. And also check us out on YouTube. You can actually see us as we do this because we live stream to YouTube while we're recording. And check us out. You can see my new backgrounds that I have in the background. Louis has it now. Uona has it. I mean, everybody's kind of adding on backgrounds these days. So backgrounds are the new thing. But check us out, and you can see us as we're doing this, and make sure you click the little bell on YouTube so you get notified each time that we're live or each time that we've recorded something, so you can check us out there. But please follow us. Please subscribe because, hey, this is good stuff. This is stuff that picks you up, and that's what's really important today. So anyway, on Facebook, I saw a couple of posts I wanted to share, and they're right in line with what we're talking about here. And I wanted to get your take on it. I actually responded on Facebook, but I wanted to see what you would have said if you had seen them on Facebook. First one comes from somebody calling herself Pat. And I said we weren't going to talk about the pandemic, but she does. So we'll open it up just that much. She says, since the beginning of this pandemic, I've not felt any emotional attachment to what is going on. Yes, I follow the rules. I've stocked up on food staples to prepare for a long haul. Yes, I'm building up my immune system. Yes, I've used a mask when I had to go out. All outward actions. But inside me, I can feel no anxiety, no fear. I'm just observing and wondering. I'm wondering, what is really going on? Is this physical or spiritual? I'm wondering if we're being manipulated. I'm curious. I'm just observing it all, and I can tell my mind is open to any explanation with no preference on which explanation is the truth. I have no emotional or mental resistance to this event, and this morning it occurred to me that there may be many, many people out there doing the same. So she wanted to know, does anyone else have the same experience going on?
Well, something was curious to me in that statement, and is the idea of having no preference towards which answer would be truthful or mm-hmm. the truth. Mm-hmm. I think I have a tendency to have a preference for the truth. So I'm not sure about how to answer the question. You know, it sounds to me, I could look at it like this. It sounds to me, this is somebody that has done all the things that are important to do. So she's not in denial that something's going on.
Right.
She's saying, no, I see that it's going on, and I see that I need to stock up and wash my hands and stay inside and, you know, do all the things that the people that are experts are telling me are important. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really feeling any sense of fear or anxiety about it. I would say, well, great. Mm-hmm. Great, right? There are people that think that the media is trying to stir us up and make us afraid. I don't think that the media is wholesale trying to scare anyone.
Not consciously.
It's kind of like, you know, if the news that's being reported is scary, then and you feel scared over it, okay, it's okay.
We do have to be honest. That's how they make their money. They have always made their money by putting out headlines and stories that have a strong negative focus so that you just keep getting drawn into it. But it's not that they're doing something special in this case. This is just continuation of business as usual.
But when we use the ubiquitous they, right, they do this, then we're lumping in thousands or hundreds of thousands of journalists and saying that they all do the same thing, which I don't believe is ever true of any group.
Okay, that's
and fair. And I think there are people out there that are, yes, there are people that are going to sensationalize everything. But when we just wholesale decide that's what they do, then we start leaning towards being open to conspiracy theories and things like that. So I think, but as far as like, I kind of understand the question in the sense that there have been times when something happened, now it wasn't a global pandemic. It was something very much closer to home and just like someone said something to me, kind of, you know, two people in a relationship having a conversation thing. But I remember when my son, I don't remember what happened. I just remember when my son was like a teenager, he said or did something and I had no, like, my logical part of my brain was saying, wow, that really should have upset you. But I didn't feel upset. I didn't feel anything. I was like, you know. And I looked at that later and said, well, that was because, you know, Jeffrey was talking about inner work. That was because of the inner work that I had done, to where I just didn't have an emotional charge over certain things. Right? And that is because of judgment. Like, when we get an emotional charge, it's because we have judged something to mean a certain thing. Mm-hmm. So as far as saying, look, this whole thing, I've prepared for it, but I just don't feel fear or anxiety, I'm going, well, good for you. You must have done the inner work.
That was my answer. Yeah, literally.
Right?
That's exactly how I started out. Good for you. That was the first three words I wrote.
but we also say, and I think this is where I started with the hangry comment, and I never got back to it, but two things. When you feel anything, whether it's hangry or anxious or joyful or whatever, if it feels uncomfortable, you have a need that's not being met. So if you get hangry, it's because you need food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how your body reacts, mm-hmm. right? There's a physical need that needs to be met. And then once you get something to eat, you're like, okay, cool, I feel better now. Sorry that mm-hmm. I was so irritable. I just really needed something to eat. The other thing is value system. So, like, when you feel guilty, like if my best friend keeps reaching out to me and I've been so busy, I haven't been able to call her back, and I start feeling guilty about it, like, oh, I really need to call her. Mm. Why do I feel guilty? Because I have a value around what it means to be a good friend. That's all. So if you're sad about this whole pandemic or you're scared, you have a value attached to that.
Right.
What is your value? Well, you care about, you're compassionate. You're watching people die. It's not fun, right? I mean, if you bring it back to your value, you'll judge yourself much less. You'll be like, okay, I have these feelings because I have this value around whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's certainly going to be some benefit to that. I can also see that it could play out that somebody goes to look at their values and their values are such that, to put a fine point on it, they value blame. They value pointing fingers. And
maybe, yeah.
But so if you come back to that, you're going to kind of reinforce it. So there's like a little bit of a two-way street there.
If you come back to that, then if you're in blame, and whether you're blaming yourself or you're blaming someone else, you're always in a very low level catabolic energy,
exactly.
Victim energy, right?
Right?
Because it happens in relationships, when like couples or parents and kids or whatever, but get in an argument.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to be the bully.
Right.
So they blame the other person. They're like, well, this is your fault because
Which
you
is
said
ironic,
whatever,
because that's what a bully does.
Right? And that person says, well, and that person says, I did not. I only did it because you did blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
So they're both vying for victim status. They want to be the victim. They don't want to be the bully. It's like, no, this isn't my fault. And what do you think gets created when two people are vibing together, creating as much victim energy as possible?
But let's just say what they're creating is a vibe I don't want to be anywhere near.
Yeah, well, it's not going to create, they're just going to create more of the same.
Yes.
And so if you catch yourself, you know, one of the biggest symptoms of a really low level of not just energy, but self-love is judging other people.
Hmm.
And so if we're judging and blaming and, you know, it's not a high level of consciousness that's going to be able to create anything, but more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a good idea to let go of it however you can.
No,
but most of it's always the worst of it's pointed at ourselves.
Oh God. Yes.
If you're blaming and judging someone else, then you know how that saying that says, if you're pointing a finger, you've got
three others pointing back at you.
Pointing back at you. Yeah. Well, there's some truth to that, in that we always, whatever the judgment line is, we're putting that judgment on ourselves as well.
Absolutely. Oh, and yeah.
That's a terrible place to be.
I'd say that there's a lot of truth in it. I'd say it's an LOA truth, because the moment that we're putting out that kind of judgment, we don't put out that kind of judgment in a way that says, I am so happy and joyful.
Right?
So yeah. We're putting out an energy that says, rah. And when you put out an energy that says, rah, you get back an energy that says, rah. I don't care what you call it. That's just what you get back.
So it's okay to feel those things and feel them without judgment. But remember that emotions are energy in motion. They need to pass through you.
Yes.
And they will in about 90 seconds if we don't keep adding on to the story.
That's the great news. We don't have to suffer very long. We can suffer for a very, very short period of time and basically say, I'm not
good. And is it even suffering, right? It might just be feeling the pain.
Yeah.
And when we suffer,
suffering for the choice. I mean, like you said, you can choose not to suffer about it at all. You can just feel the pain and not be suffering. You know, I guess I was kind of emoting to those who are the sufferers.
Well, you know. We get to make that choice.
We certainly do.
I don't want to suffer.
Suffering's not fun.
Suffering.
No. I love the story that Joel's told on numerous occasions about the guy on the plane who found himself seated next to a guy from Poland and got into a conversation about him. And he said, you know, I'm impressed and amazed by the Polish people. And the Pole says, why? He says, well, because you guys have suffered so much over the years. You have been attacked. You have been brutalized. You've been taken over by so many different foreign countries and so forth, all that kind of thing. And the Pole stopped him right there and said, no, yes, we have struggled, but we have never suffered.
Oh, yes. That's great.
It's a good story.
That's a great story. Yeah. So I think that was my soapbox for the week. Just the recognition, because I come up against this so often, people thinking that they felt a certain thing that didn't feel good, and because of that, that LOA is not working for them.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not the feeling. It's the judgment we place on it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the self-judging we do about the feeling.
Now I'm going to bring in something else that normally I don't bring in. And we're going to do it very carefully so that we only bring in just a little piece of it. Just that much. That's it. Because somebody posted about politics. And she started off by saying, I know this is a no-no.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Hey, but, it's part of life. Know,
she needed to get it out. She said, I feel so saddened by the beacon of light for this world dropping out of the race. I think she's referring to Bernie Sanders withdrawing from the Democratic primary race. And she said, did we as a country attract this outcome because so many are focused on the other candidates, even if it's negative? I've been listening to Abraham for years, and this is not making sense right now to me. Can someone please explain how we are attracting the opposite of light and love in this country? So that we just touched on politics. Now we can skip politics and we can go back to light and love and what's really going on there.
Well, here's the problem. And you know me, I do not sign off an email with love and light.
That's right.
I sign off an email with love and magic.
You do.
And there's a lot of darkness and magic. And the world is not comprised of just light. And the brighter the light is, the darker the shadows are. And that's a hard thing for people to understand sometimes, but that we came here to feel everything, to experience everything. And, you know, some of us are happy that Bernie dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us also feel like we had the most talented and diverse candidates for this next election in the history of our country, and we ended up with Biden and Trump, right? And no offense to Biden, I'm not anti-Biden, but you know, politics are politics, and politics are not going to usher in a new era of love and light.
Absolutely.
It's not going to be politics. Politics might be part of the strategy, but that's not how it's going to arrive, because you can't legislate morality. You can't legislate goodness.
People have been trying for decades, but
right,
that doesn't work.
Right. That's all I'm saying, right? Is that this person's upset that Bernie pulled out of the race because Bernie has values that to her, are good values, mm-hmm. and she has values that are similar, and she recognizes that if those things would be put into action, that the world would be better. And I'm not denying any of that, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But that's how it always is. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so we can't pin all of our hopes for all of humanity on one person, regardless of who that one person is.
That's true.
And did we attract it? Yeah, we did. I guess we can take responsibility for as a whole, you know, country or a whole globe. But think about that. Think about how many unwitting creators there are. Think about how many unconscious creators there are. And we're co-creating together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep.
That's right. So, in fact, That to me is the best part of the message right there. Just that part right there, that we are co-creating together. And it reminds me of something that I mentioned, the Abraham Hicks daily quote that came out today. The one that came out yesterday, this is not from memory. I don't have it in front of me, so this is going to be a little bit butchered. But the gist of it was, one person in the vortex is more powerful than a million people outside the vortex.
Okay.
And the reason I mention that is politics is not usually a game where you find a lot of things in the vortex. You find a lot of things outside the vortex in politics. In fact, I would go so far, you know, my own views on politics. I would go so far as to say, you won't find anything in the vortex in politics. You're going to find everything in politics is outside the vortex. So don't look to politics for the vortex. If you want to be in the vortex, go for the vortex, because then it doesn't matter what millions of other people are doing. They're all outside the vortex. You're in the vortex. You got the power right now.
So here's a really interesting concept. And I believe it's from Stephen Covey, right? So
okay.
Long time ago. But it's the idea of a sphere of influence and a sphere of your sphere of control and your sphere of concern, right? So if you draw a big circle, and that's your sphere of influence, your sphere of control, and a bigger circle, that when I think of that big circle, I think of the globe. Right. And that's my sphere of concern. So there are things in the smaller circle in my sphere of control that I have control over.
Yes.
And that I can influence. Like think about my office that needs some decluttering. Mm-hmm. Right. I have control over my office. Then there's the globe and this pandemic and everything in the world that you're concerned about that you feel like you have no control over. If all of your energy is focused towards the things you have no control over, your actual sphere of influence and control will shrink and you will lose power.
Mm-hmm.
But if you will focus your energy on what you do have control over and you get that in order, then your sphere of influence will actually grow until it can touch some of those areas of your concern.
So true. So true. Yeah. It's very true. In fact, to kind of take it a step further, and kind of along the lines of what I was saying a moment ago, if you work on getting yourself into the vortex, because that's really what you're talking about there. You're talking about getting into the vortex. When you do that, first of all, in order to stay in the vortex, you really can't spend a whole lot of time focusing on all the stuff that you don't want. You have to go through the whole cycle. Yes, you identify what you don't want, but then that turns into what you do want, and then you start attracting that, and you know, you do that five-step cycle that Abraham talks about. You don't stay on step one. That's what we've been talking about this show. People who stay on step one, who are just, you know, angry all the time or frustrated all the time or whatever, because they're just on step one, continuous step one, over and over and over. Step one, step one, step one, step one. You
so
gotta
it's
move.
Like, you know, I was telling my husband this last night, and he said, "Oh, like the Serenity Prayer."
Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About being able to recognize the things that you can change.
Exactly.
And not to worry about those things that you can't change. If you focus your energy on what you can affect, then that sphere will grow and it will start to reach into the other places that you are concerned about. I think that's a great
It is. Place. By the way, there's also one other thing that I'll share. I've had my own background politically, and I've had a lot of political stuff I have to let go of over the years and so forth. One thing that I can tell to somebody, if you're dealing with the addiction to politics that I went through, I will not hesitate to call it that, because I had very much been addicted to politics in the past. I'll give you a clue. on how to begin turning that around. If none of this stuff is working for you, you find you're still just stuck there. You're stuck in that one place. Try this little exercise. Take whatever your favorite political issue is and express it only in the positive. Don't say it anyway about, yes, I don't want this to happen. And see if you can do that. That exercise alone will get you into the vortex.
Right. Talk about what you do want to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And right. It, by the way, this is a great way to shut somebody up who's a political operative because they're not used to thinking that way. They don't know how to answer.
They're like, aren't you upset that this and this and this hasn't happened? And you're like, well, no, I want this to happen. Yeah.
Well, I want this. Of course, we all want that.
This is what I want.
Awesome. Oh, this is good. This has been fun. So thank you for this exploration about emotions. And, you know, we don't have to be afraid of them anymore, do we? We can let go of that fear and just move through them.
And just don't judge them.
Don't judge
yourself. Don't make it wrong. That's the number one thing. As soon as you make it wrong, that's what will affect your manifestations.
There you go. In a nutshell. Thank you very much, Cindy. We appreciate it as usual. Thank you, live streamers, especially thank you to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.